Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Carlos Collazo, special edition of the podcast and YouTube video today. We got a hot one here. We have Mock Draft 1.0. It's time. There's enough weeks have happened now. There's enough stuff that has happened where we are seeing in-season evaluations now of these players. We are seeing that everything's changing a little bit. And so we're diving in a mock draft. Carlos does this every year, but I'm very excited that it's done with a scout. So Carlos makes a pick, a scout for a team makes a pick, and back and forth, which adds that little bit of who's that other person going to take next? That's really fun. And the other thing about this is like, it kind of does kind of put, you know, you put pen to paper in some ways, like, okay,
yeah.
You're working on an updated 300 right now that we're going to be, but this kind of helps that, doesn't it?
It does. And I initially started recruiting some scouts to help me with these early season mocks because I always try and emphasize it. At this stage in the calendar, the mock draft is much more us trying to get the talented players in the right position on the board rather than we've got intel that this team is really deep on X player. Occasionally that happens for teams and players this early, but for the most part, everyone is casting a really wide net at this point. It's far too early for them to get super specific with who's going to be the first player off the board. We don't have any Adley Rutschman or Bobby Witt Jr. where we're all kind of like, all right, they're probably going to go at the very top. And so my thinking is getting an actual scout to participate in this exercise with me will be some sort of a value add for the reader. So we're always trying to get the players in the right order. And I actually checked last year, we had a mock draft. Typically around the first few weeks of the college season, we have our first in-season mock. We had 21 of the 30 first rounders in the mock at this stage last year. We had 3 of the top 10, which is probably as good as happens on draft day. So I was actually quite happy with that number. If
you
we get a similar
3 of the top 10, you mean 3 in the right spot.
Three in the right spot inside the top 10. Everyone who was in the top 10 of that mock obviously went in the first round, but I think we had Hagan Smith 5, we had Connor Griffin 9, and we had Seaver King 10. So those were like the right picks for the right team. So maybe we'll get a couple of those, but I think in general, the bulk of these guys will probably be going in the first round. I think directionally, seeing where guys are in this mock draft is useful in terms of early season performance. And also just having a scout participate in this alerts you to some players that maybe you weren't personally considering in this range, and you kind of get an idea for how quickly the consensus can fall apart or just the wide group of players that are kind of in play at this range. But yeah, it's fun. Always fun to put together a mock.
I'm going to use that as a little bit of foreshadowing because some of what you, if you're, as you're watching this, Baseball America's subscribers, you've already seen this. We have the full 40 picks of mock draft up at baseballamerica.com. And so you've gotten to digest this. We're going to go through the top 11 picks today. And I'm guessing that some of you watching this are going to be shocked or angry or whatever, because you're going to say, what are they doing? They're just doing this to mess things up and change things around. And that's not the case. What we're trying to do here. So this is from reporting. This is not, we're just throwing names out there, or this is Carlos's opinion of who's the best players. This is trying to talk to teams. And again, it's early, but trying to talk to teams, trying to get an understanding of how the board is changing.
And I'll say too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just the value add. If you're actually reading the mock draft, we've got commentary from the scout who did this exercise with me on every pick. And so even if you don't think I know what I'm talking about, I think it's really valuable just to get that feedback on like what the scout thinks about every single player that's taken. I think that's a really interesting insight for me personally. And I'm assuming for people interested in the mock drafts, like having an actual scout give some feedback on specific picks and where players are on the board. Definitely a good value add for our subscribers.
Okay. We're not going to make you wait any longer. The Nationals pick number one, and in mock draft 1.0, Carlos, who is the first pick?
Yeah. So right now, and to be clear, I did the first pick. I had every odd number team. Our scout had every even number team. We went back and forth. Jamie Arnold is the pick at one for the Nationals. I don't feel like there's a slam dunk 1-1 at this point. I've asked a number of scouts throughout the industry. I haven't gotten that feedback that there is a 1-1. We're just missing him at this point. But I do think Jamie Arnold has probably done the most to grab that mantle of anyone in the class so far. He's off to a really strong start through his first three games. He struck out 24 batters, walked two. He's got two plus pitches with his fastball and his slider. He's showing more of a changeup this spring than he did last year. That looks like a potentially above average pitch. And he's a pretty locked in slam dunk starter profile from the left side. So I don't know that, like, I feel confident that this isn't going to change depending on what happens. But for right now, Jamie Arnold has done as much as anyone in the class to kind of take on this 1-1 spot.
Well, the way I would put that is that he has done everything he can to be in that consideration, which is all you mm-hmm. can do at this point, right? Like, we're early enough yep. in the season. There's a lot more to be done, but he was already in that consideration before the season, and he's done nothing but improve that, mm-hmm. which could also kind of be said, I would say, probably for our number two pick. So the Angels are picking second, and the scout made this pick. So the scout's mm-hmm. pick was?
The scout's pick was Tyler Bremner for the Angels, right-handed pitcher out of UC Santa Barbara. And I was really curious to see who was going to be two, because for me, picking one was easier at this stage because I feel like Arnold is kind of the most obvious guy. But there's a handful of players that I feel like make sense at two. The Angels, obviously, just given the players they've taken and how they've fast-tracked their prospects, I kind of assumed it would be a college player or someone who would move quickly. But also, Bremner did not have the loudest start to the season. Like, Arnold is in front of Bremner because his starts have been pretty smooth, pretty easy. But I was encouraged to see Bremner here because his stuff has been quality in each of his starts so far this spring. And our scout really likes him because it's three pitches that you could say are above average or plus. He really likes the fastball, mentions that the changeup is a now major league pitch. He's got command. He's got a good body. So he has all the pieces there to be a middle rotation guy pretty quickly. And I'm not sure that you couldn't move Tyler Bremner quickly if the Angels did want to take another fast mover.
Well, if the Angels take him, he will move quickly. We know that much. But so then this is where I'm also fascinated. With the third pick, we see another pitcher go off the board. The Mariners picking third, which, by the way, the Mariners getting another pitcher. But the Mariners picking third, three pitchers at the top of this mock. This is a mock. It is March. There is April, May, June, July. There is still plenty of time, but mm-hmm. before we get to who was taken third, how this draft board sets up, how surprised or not surprised would you be if we saw three pitchers go 1, 2, 3 come draft day?
I think that would be just, yeah, it would be surprising in the sense that we don't see it too often, but I think with this class, there are question marks with the hitters that we have at the top of the board. I mean, one of the players we'll get to at some point later on in this video entered the year with real hit tool questions. I think there are players who are exciting from a power standpoint. There are some players who have done positive things early this spring who play premium positions on the college side who are moving up closer to this range that maybe get into this top three mix. But I just think that maybe the highest upside players in the class right now are pitchers. And the pick for the Mariners at three is Seth Hernandez, who I think you can make a very easy case that his upside is as high as anyone in the class. I said something similar about Jackson Jobe a few years ago. He was in the same class as Jack Leiter and Kamar Rocker. And we were hearing, you know, Jackson Jobe, in terms of pure stuff and upside, he has better upside than those college guys. I think you could easily say that for Seth Hernandez. The fit with Hernandez and the Mariners is a dream fit for me personally, just given the player development track record that Seattle has with their pitchers. But it is a risky profile in general. Seattle has not taken a high school pitcher in the first round in a long time. With that said, they just gave Ryan Sloan first round money a year ago as an overpay. So I think it makes sense on talent and just given what Seattle can do with pitchers. But for me, I think Seth Hernandez has a real shot to be 1-1. That wouldn't shock me either if that happened. So I think he's certainly in the mix at the very top of the board.
As you said, it is a risky demographic. We're not saying it's not. But at the same time, I do kind of feel like the need to point out, when we talk about truly top of the draft guys, right? So you mentioned Jackson Jobe is the last high school right-hander to go top five. The Tigers had to do it all over again. They would. They wouldn't.
Still looks
they
like
they're not having a regret on that. The last one before that, Hunter Green. Now, that points out the rarity of this happening. Top five prep pitcher, high school right-hander.
I think you have to align with a talent, like a really impressive high school talent, and also in a class where you don't have a clear hitter that makes sense. Because I think teams would prefer a hitter who fits on talent in this range. Just sometimes you don't have one available, and I think that could be the case for this year's draft.
And just to add in the lefties, the last time a lefty went top five, prep lefty went top five, 2017.
In the background here for me, Mackenzie Gore.
And by the way, I just want to point out on that. That's 3 for 3. We can talk about the risk of the demographic. Yeah. That is, in the last 8 years, all three of those. I know Jackson Jobe Hunter Green's established himself as a front rotation big league starter. Mackenzie Gore has at minimum established himself as a reliable middle of the rotation starter, I would say. Jackson Jobe isn't there yet, but Jackson Jobe right now, if the Tigers at this moment wanted to trade Jackson Jobe, they could almost just name their price because he is the top pitching prospect non-Roki Sasaki division in baseball. Mm-hmm. So that gets us through the top three. And finally at 4, we have a position player taken. Rockies pick 4, scout picked the Rockies pick. Who went 4?
Yeah, so 4 is Billy Carlson, who is a teammate of Seth Hernandez. So it's Corona High products back-to-back, 3 and 4. This would be draft history if and when it happens. We've not had, I went back just to make sure and look and see what our best drafts were for high school teammates. I believe it's the Harvard Westlake 2012 year where Max Fried and Lucas Giolito went. Max Fried went top 10. I think he was 6th overall, and then Lucas Giolito was 16th. So this will be the first time, if the draft pans out like this, where we have two high school teammates going in the top 5, and I believe also top 10 picks. But Billy Carlson,
the other
is maybe
one
the
I can
best.
Come up with.
Yeah, go ahead.
The other one that I would just throw out there is would have been 02, I believe it is, because in 02 you had Scott Kazmir, and now I'm going to blank on his teammate. But there were two high school pitchers from the same from Cypress Hill, I think it was.
Do you know if they were both top 10?
They weren't. Kazmir's 15.
So this, like, if you specifically say two top 10 from the same high school, I think that'll be a chance to have some little mini draft history for people who are really crazy about the draft and like that kind of stuff. But Corona, I think, is one of the most talented high school teams we've seen. And it's Billy Carlson. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, but it was Clint Everts went 5 to the Nationals and Scott Kazmir went 15 to the Mets. So
okay, perfect. So two top 10 is still in play. And with Carlson, you have a just phenomenal defensive shortstop, absolute lock to stick at the position. For a lot of scouts, they think he's the best shortstop defender in this class overall. He's also been a pitcher. He gets into the mid-90s on the mound. He's got a 70 grade arm. I think, like, how much you believe in his power getting to average is probably going to determine, like, ultimately how high Billy Carlson goes. But there are a lot of people who buy into the bat speed and his contact skills and just the body filling out. So this could be a really well-rounded. I mean, for me, I think of Mason Wynn a lot with Billy Carlson, just given the two-way status, the defense, the big arm. And if you redrafted Mason Wynn's draft, he's going top 3, top 5. And that's in this range here for Billy Carlson.
So that takes us to number 5, the Cardinals picking 5. And I would say the first of what we would say the most famous players who came into the year in this draft goes 5. So who did you pick? Because you were picking 5. Who did you pick at 5?
Yeah, at 5 for St. Louis, I really just couldn't see any reason why Ethan Holliday was still on the board. I almost had to take him at this stage because I think he could have gone in any of the three spots in front of this after I took Jamie Arnold one, to be quite honest. I mean, the Cardinals specifically have targeted hitters who make a lot of contact in zone in recent drafts. JJ Weatherholt, their pick last year at seven, certainly is a different profile than Holliday. But I wonder if Holliday is on the board here, if just the upside potential and the power is too much for them to pass up. I think in terms of hit power combination on the high school side, Ethan Holliday is the best player in this class. He is a massive human being. He obviously has the bloodlines of his father and his older brother, Jackson. Jackson and Ethan are two very different players. I think there is some positional risk with Ethan Holliday in terms of, is he going to play third? Is he going to play first? Is he going to play corner outfield? Fortunately, I think he's going to hit enough and hit for enough power that any of those positions he'll profile really well. And because of that, I still expect him to go in a pretty great spot.
His dad was a left fielder who played for the Cardinals for 8 years and was really good as a left fielder. I think that, you know,
I imagine Cardinals fans will probably like this pick because in our previous mocks for this class, we've had Ethan Holliday in the 1-1 hole both times. So maybe they weren't expecting themselves to have a chance, but I think there's a lot. You never know what happens in a draft, and this year it's definitely wide open at the top.
We are in the midst of a shortstop run because the Pirates pick six and another shortstop goes off the board.
Yeah, at six for the Pirates, our scout pick again. He goes with Merrick Houston at Wake Forest and really just notes the power increase that he's shown early this spring. We've written about it at Baseball America. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's hitting home runs more frequently compared to his career norm. And I think on the college side, you could pretty easily say Merrick Houston is the best defensive shortstop in the class. And so when you take a hitter or a shortstop who has shown really advanced contact skills previously, he's layered on more strength, he's adding power. If you think he's a hitter who in the future can get to average game power, it's a really well-rounded profile, slam dunk to stick at shortstop, an everyday type. I think he fits in this range. I'm curious, like, what's the ultimate upside for him? Because I think you can maybe say he lacks some of the upside that some of the other hitters in this class might be able to provide. But in terms of well-rounded profiles, Merrick Houston has a really strong one.
I also love, then we have another college shortstop. Again, this is a shortstop run going seven to the Marlins, but it's kind of the flip side of what you just said in some ways here, mm-hmm. which is if the Pirates in this mock draft, again, in March, so we're not saying write it in there, the Pirates, it's done, yeah. Take the pick. But if the Pirates in this scenario take the guy who you're like is extremely safe because you know that you believe in the glove and you think he's well-rounded, the Marlins at seven take another college shortstop and you're betting on the bat.
Yeah, with Dean Curley, who's the pick here for the Marlins, this was my pick specifically. I think you have a lot of comfort in the safety of the profile because the hitting ability is just so polished and so well-rounded. Dean Curley has been, I would say he's one of the more well-rounded hitters in this college class. We're going to talk a ton this spring about there are a lot of power hitters with missed concerns. There are some contact hitters where you question the power. Well, Dean Curley kind of blends the two really nicely. He hits for average. He doesn't expand the zone. He takes his walks. He's got thump. Where he differs from Merrick Houston, as you were alluding to, is he's probably not a shortstop in the long run. Most of the scouts that I talk to and me personally, I think his actions just fit better at third base or second base. But I almost think of him in sort of the same profile as a Matt Shaw type, a college shortstop who's going to move off the position, but he does enough offensively that you're kind of fine with that. I think he's going to stick on the dirt somewhere. He's got a plus arm. It would fit really nicely at third base. I think that would be a great position for him. And you just feel confident that he's going to hit for average. He's going to hit for power. He's going to get on base. He's done it in the SEC. He's continuing this spring to really hit at a high level. And I think for the Marlins, you want as many bats as you can possibly get in that system. So I think on talent, it makes sense. And given where that org is at, just infusing some confidence in your hitters would be good for them.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's VANTA.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
I got to give credit to Wake Forest. Like, we talk about Wake Forest being kind of pitching you, and they've had a number of very premium pitchers taken at the top of the draft. But here we are. They had Siever King last year. And here we are. It is pick 8. And the second Wake Forest position player goes off the board to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, Wake Forest pitcher, you, two top 10 hitting prospects in the draft a year after they have three in the top 10. This was the first pick that was a little bit surprising to me. We have Ethan Conrad now in kind of like a first round range. I haven't personally been thinking of him as a top 10 pick, but the rationale from our scout, I think it makes a lot of sense, just given the sort of athleticism and tools you have here. Conrad is maybe the least famous name of the players we've talked about right now, who is a Marist transfer. This is his first year with Wake Forest. He's playing center field now, but he's a big physical athlete, 6'4". He can run well for his size. He might be able to stick in center field. He's got above average power. He's an above average defender. And if you think he's a plus hitter on top of that, or an above average hitter, it's a lot of above average tools from a college position player in a draft where we're questioning a lot of the college bats. So the more I thought about it, the more I was like, okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But when you think about some of the names we haven't talked about, it's just interesting to think about Conrad potentially going here. So I think this is a very thought-provoking pick.
There's a lot of thoughts being provoked here, because there is a name that we have not heard yet who started the year number one on our board. So At number 9, we are staying on the college side. We are staying on the shortstop side too. So let me kind of lead into you by asking kind of the bigger picture question here. You said there are a lot of, is this right now, it's a mock draft in March, is this kind of running kind of home to safety here, which is when in doubt, if the class is a little bit muddied, when in doubt, go with the college middle infielder, because that's generally viewed as, I mean, kind of like the stock index fund of the first round in a lot of ways.
I think so.
Because
I mean,
this is just strength of the draft.
Well, I think both. I think the depth of college hitters in this top two rounds range, there are a lot of hitters to really like, and maybe not the same elite players leading the class that you'd want to see at this stage. But I remember one of my first years that I started here, all the directors that I would talk to would say, just watch every spring. What's going to happen is the college hitters are going to move up boards. The high school players are just kind of going to slip down. Pitchers are going to slip down, because the hitters you can feel confident in, they're going to go really quickly. Teams are going to feel more confident taking flyers on pitchers later in the draft. But the elite hitters in a class, you don't get multiple shots at those guys. And for the Reds here, we have Iva Arquette, Oregon State shortstop. I think he has some of the most exciting upside available on the board in this draft here. For me, it's a big league body now. He's 6'5", 220 pounds. He does not look like your typical shortstop, but he actually has a chance to stick there just given how athletic he is. It's huge raw power. It's a ton of bat speed. There are some swing and miss questions. We're getting into the range on the board already where we're going to talk about a lot of swing and miss questions, but he's off to a really strong start. We wrote about it earlier this week. I think he's done some nice things for his approach. It would not shock me if Iva Arquette continued to perform and shot himself up into top five range, because you could easily point out to me and say, hey, if you think he's a shortstop and you think he's going to hit and he has this sort of power, he has more upside than any hitter in the class. So the Reds historically have liked these athletic big players. A couple of them on their big league team right now are pretty exciting. Maybe you hit on another one here.
And we're not even, okay, so now we're at 10. The White Sox pick 10. Sorry, White Sox, you weren't eligible. The worst season that any White Sox fan hopes to ever see in their lifetime, and really that any fan base hopes to ever see in their lifetime. And if you're not in, I wasn't around for the 62 Mets, I'm proud to say. I'm not that old. You have to be that old to see, basically. Maybe that Tigers team was that there was one Tigers team, what was that? Oh, something that was really bad too. But the White Sox pick 10, and I'm fascinated by this pick because they have Noah Schultz right now. The pick at 10 is probably the most Noah Schultzian player in this draft, I would say. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I think it's the most White Soxian pick in this draft. It's Cruz Schoolcraft, who's a left-handed pitcher and first baseman. I think most scouts in the industry prefer him as a left-handed pitcher because he's 6'8". He throws 98 miles per hour. He's got a changeup that could be a plus pitch. He's got a developing slider as well that could be an above-average pitch. The White Sox have hit gold with a lot of their left-handed pitchers they've drafted in the first round. They traded Garrett Crochet, but he was really effective for them. If you redraft that one, he's not going beyond pick 2, I would imagine.
And you could argue one. It's Spencer Strider or him. You've already done that.
You could argue him one. Yeah, they just traded him, got a great return in terms of prospect haul. Then Hagen Smith was their pick just last year. So why not go back to the well? I think on talent, it Cruz Schoolcraft fits here. He could easily go higher than this. There are scouts that I've talked to who view him as very similar to Seth Hernandez, who went 3 in this mock and who I said could go 1. It's just you don't often get left-handed high school pitchers of this size with this sort of velocity and athleticism and body control. And if you're a team that wants to dream on upside, again, like there are some safer picks here in this mock draft. There are some upside picks. Cruz Schoolcraft is absolutely an upside play. As if he lasted much longer than this in the actual draft. I mean, this is a mock for a reason, but yeah, he's got just loads of potential.
Okay. We're to pick 11. We're stopping at 11. But I'm going to ask it this way. We're at pick 11. How? Why have we not seen Jace LaViolette?
Yeah. Part of me wanted to just continue not picking Jace LaViolette to see how long it would have taken our scout to pick him. But I also thought,
you're
like,
playing
at this
game
stage,
of chicken.
Exactly. At this stage, I'm like, is he really going to keep sliding this far? The reason that he slid is because he has not addressed the contact questions that he entered the year having. That was kind of his big question mark. He's always walked a lot. He hits for a ton of power, but there's just a lot of swing and miss in this profile. His career strikeout rate is around 25%. That's a tick higher than Spencer Jones, who went in the back of the first round. But we had similar questions with him at the time. And then early this spring, we just haven't gotten the best feedback from scouts on how LaViolette has looked in the box, how he's looked with his run times, with his athleticism. I think a big reason why Jace is 1-1 on our board entering the year is because he was such a unique athlete who had such special raw power from the left side. And you feel very confident that he's going to play center field where he's a plus runner as a 6'5", 6'6" outfielder. It just was such a unique tool set and athletic foundation that if that backs up a little bit, and if he hasn't addressed the sort of pure hitting concerns you have, and now you're wondering, okay, is he more of a right fielder? There are just more questions with his profile now than answers that we've had early this spring. And so depending on like how teams view the pure hitting ability with Jace, I do think he could start sliding into this range. I don't think that we ever framed it as like Jace is like the clear slam dunk 1-1 in this class. But entering the year, he had the best combination of upside, tool set, big league frame, track record. I mean, his track record at Texas A&M was pretty phenomenal. Right now, he's hitting under 230. He's still walking. He's still hitting for some power. But I would be curious what the lowest batting average in college for a college hitter in their platform year is. I think he'll turn it around and start performing.
Right. I was going to say, we're recording this on a Friday. You know that by recording this on a Friday and posting this, you know, the week after, he's going to go 11 for 12 this weekend. And it's going to be like, what do you mean he's hitting under 225? It's week 4. So it's like he's hitting 390 now. Like it's early. This is something that we are hearing from decision makers, not we're driving the question saying, look at his stats. Oh, that means he cast a fall. It is something where, as you laid out, there are questions that it can be answered still, right? Like this season has not been written in any way, shape, or form.
And I'll just say it will
improve those things.
It will be infinitely more valuable for him to perform well throughout the course of conference play when the quality of competition he's playing is much better than. You could kind of look at a slow start and say, okay, you know what? Like, it was a slow start. He figured it out.
It won't matter.
It won't matter at all. Like, him, if you had to choose poor performance for your first 3 weeks and getting that like anchoring bias thrown in, or performing poorly the entirety of the SEC, every single hitter would choose the former. So he definitely still has time. I mean, his tool set stacks up with everyone in the class still. But there, again, like there are just more questions with Jace's pure hitting ability than you would typically see from a player who's slotted 1-1, and that's why he's not there now. I'll be really curious to see how he kind of writes the ship moving forward. But for now, a lot of questions there. And I think a lot of other interesting players in this draft. Again, none of these are super easy. I think you could argue your way into a number of players in a number of different spots. And throughout the rest of this mock draft, you'll see that. I still quite like this class, but I also am someone who writes up 500 players. So I probably value depth a little more than maybe casual fans of the draft do. I'm curious what you think, what your thoughts are on this draft, JJ, because I'm so locked into it every day. But what's your perception of it right now?
My perception is how wide open it is right now, right? Like, I would say, to kind of go back to your point, that, you know, like at this time last year, we did this and three of the picks were the picks, right? They went in that spot. I wouldn't be stunned if something like that happened again here. But what I'd say more than that is barring injury, I kind of feel like the pitchers that we talked about at the top of this board, 1, 2, and 3, they're going to go really high, right? Like if they just keep doing what they're doing, those are track record stuff, kind of check all the boxes where it's like, maybe it's not 1, 2, 3, but that's a group that I feel like there's not a lot of variance to if everyone stays healthy, because those were the guys coming in. We've already basically shown up enough this year, especially on the college side, to be like, okay, you know, Jamie Arnold's the same Jamie Arnold. Again, barring injury, we're not having to worry about like, oh, where was the guy that we saw? This isn't, we've seen examples of it. Like Chase Dollander, I would say, is an example where it's like, we saw 1 year and it's like the next year comes and like, he's still good, but we're not seeing the Chase Dollander we saw last year add some questions. We're not seeing that with the pitchers. I feel like once you get past that, like this is where the volatility here is that, okay, I struggle to believe that with the track record that Ethan Holliday has, you know, he could go 1, he could go 5, he could go 6.
Yeah, he feels like a profile that just is not going to fall too far. Like it would be really hard to see Ethan Holliday stumbling throughout the spring in Oklahoma. So he feels almost like a safe lock for the
I feel like
top 10.
A lot of hay's in the barn there, to use a terrible old cliche. But but when you get to these college bats, that's where I feel like there is a lot of volatility here, right? Like,
I think the college hitter race is wide open. It's like, go perform, go show that you're the best college hitter in the class, because the door is wide open for someone to walk through and claim that spot.
You know, but if you enjoyed this, we promise you, you would enjoy at baseballamerica.com much more in-depth version of this for all 40 picks. We went to 40 so that, because, well, I'll let you explain it, Carlos, because we were trying to figure out how many picks you were going to go. Why did we go 40?
The draft is very convoluted in terms of how the order is determined. So because the Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Mets really invest in their team and spend a lot of money, they have a 10-pick drop for their first-round pick. So we wanted to include all 30 teams. If you're clicking on a full-round mock draft and you're a fan of one of those three teams and you don't have someone mock to you, that would feel pretty bad. And like for me, it's kind of weird just stopping at 27 or going to an arbitrary like supplemental or comp pick. So basically the draft order is extremely convoluted, but we're going to go to the 40. So if you're a fan of a baseball team, we will have a mock pick for your team.
It is there. If you are watching this on YouTube or listening to the podcast, it is up at baseballamerica.com right now. Instant gratification on that. Our subscribers already read it. Thank you, subscribers. You get all this first. But go check it out at baseballamerica.com. Become a subscriber and you can read the full mock draft, which, as Carlos knows, will be the first of many because, you know, I'm one of the annoying ones who's like, so when's the next mock? Okay, great job. Good job on mock 1010. We have 1-1. We have 2-0 today, you know, but we wait a little while for some of it to sort out. But, you know, yes, if I had my way, Carlos would just mock do another mock every day, you know. You know, I'll do a different scout tomorrow. You know, we'll see where Jason's up in next year, in tomorrow's month.
I'll pick second next time. We'll see how it goes. You know?
But if you enjoy this, check it out. the full mock draft at baseballamerica.com. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.